Paul had worked with the congregation in the area of Galatia, and he had done a really good job, but there were some false teachers who showed up, and they began to teach some things which were not right. And you see from Galatians 4:19, and this is the chapter that we'll get to probably in a couple weeks, but you see that he says in 4:19, "My little children, of whom I am again in travail until Christ be formed in you." One of the things that Paul did, he did his best to see that Christ was formed in the Galatians, and then these false teachers come along and they mess things up, and he says this has to be done again. It was difficult the first time, but that was necessary to go back and repeat the process. When you think about the word formed, what comes to mind? He says, "I want Christ to be formed in you." What do you envision when you hear the word formed or form?
Shaped.
All right, I think that is the general definition. We're talking about shaping something, molding something, transforming something. Perhaps you think about, for example, modeling clay. You're transforming that, or you're taking a pile of building material and you're forming something from the raw material. Mom, did you have a thought?
Potters form their work.
Okay, yeah. Again, pottery, you're taking clay and you're working with it to shape it into a bowl or something else that's useful. Well, we're talking about this from a spiritual standpoint, shaping the lives of people. And I want to look at this from the standpoint or from the aspect of discipleship. When you look at the idea of disciple or discipleship, you find that it's limited to Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and Acts. You don't find that word outside of those five books, and you find it a lot. You find it that it's used 262 times in the New Testament. The word disciple means a learner. It means a follower. It means that there is someone who is trying to mold his or her life into a certain way. And that's what we're talking about. That's what we're thinking about when we think about Christianity. I've got down here 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 21. We'd like to take a look at that verse as far as thinking about becoming a disciple of Christ. As somebody's turning there, we'll make this additional point. Disciples are not merely listeners. They are doers. We're thinking about a great transformation as far as life. Somebody want to pick up for us 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 21? Anybody there? All right, Sherman, to you. Thank you. Yeah.
For to this you were called, because Jesus also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow his steps.
All right, this is Peter's version of becoming a disciple of Christ. We're trying to follow in Jesus' footsteps. And that means that we're trying to transform our lives so that we follow his model. When you look at the word which is translated disciple, it means that they follow people that they wanted to be like. That is, they wanted to imitate them. You think about a pupil. You think about an apprentice. We see apprenticeships in the world. We find that there are pupils in school. Sometimes a person wants to emulate a teacher. They're impressed either by a person's beliefs or maybe by the manner of life. And they think, I want to live my life in that way. I want to follow this particular model. And they do that. When you look at the Bible, we've got different kinds of disciples, and you can see this point illustrated very well, I think, by the next three or so passages. We've got John chapter 9 and verse 28, Mark chapter 2 and verse 18, and then also John chapter 3 verses 1 and 2. And we'd like all three of those verses read. Let's get a helper for each one. John chapter 9 and verse 28, that will be you, Mom. Mark chapter 2 and verse 18, we'd like that one read too. Our Mark 2 reader, Mark 2, verse 18, Don. And then, Sherman, let's go back to you for John chapter 3, verses 1 and 2. John chapter 9 and verse 28.
Then they reviled him and said, "You are his disciple, but we are Moses' disciples."
All right, so when you think about this idea of disciples, oftentimes, typically, it's going to refer to Christians, but you do have it being applied to some other people. Here you have a reference to people being disciples. They were learners of Moses. They went back, they followed his ways. They certainly went back and they followed what he had written or been given by God. And that's, of course, not the kind of disciple that we want to be today, but there were some in first century times and even before who were truly disciples of Moses. We've got some other disciples, Mark chapter 2 and verse 18, two different answers here as far as the people being disciples of someone.
And the disciples of John and the Pharisees used to fast, and they came and come and say unto him, "Why did the disciples of John and of the Pharisees fast, but thy disciples fast not?"
Okay, some were disciples of John the Baptist, and again, you can imagine that they, in ancient times, they would have followed around either a rabbi or they would have followed around a teacher, and that seems kind of strange to us. It doesn't seem like much of a job. But there were some people, they wanted to, I think I've got this at the bottom of the sheet. Yeah, we'll just skip ahead to point 28. Ancient rabbis trained disciples, and then these learners often became rabbis. So they would follow around people like John the Baptist, and then after they had been an apprentice, after they had been a pupil for a sufficient amount of time, then they would, of course, become, at least in some cases, a rabbi, and then people would start to follow them. So it would be just like training new teachers that we would see today, or you're training the apprentice so he can maybe go out and start his own business at some particular point in time. The Pharisees also had their disciples. We think about Paul, the author of Galatians. He had been a disciple of the Pharisees for a while, and then finally he becomes one of the leaders as far as people being influential among the Pharisees. When you think about what we're looking at here, looking at point 5C, would you say that there's any kind of disciple movement in our day and time? I mean, we obviously see that with skill trades. Sometimes a person wants to be a pupil or an apprentice of someone so they can learn how to be a plumber, or they can learn how to be an electrician. We see apprenticeships there. But any other movements in the world where you see some kind of disciple?
Well, some churches have the name disciple in their...
All right, so they're trying to pick up on that. They're trying to key in on that as far as we make disciples here. Don, did you have a thought?
A union member, a lot of times, they're kind of disciples of the...
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. So we are members of so-and-so as far as the union. Sherman?
Like nurses, if there's someone trained to be a nurse, they'll go into a field where they help the nurses.
Yeah. What about in the secular world, as far as you almost see it in the political realm, don't you? We're disciples of so-and-so. They get involved with this movement or that movement, sometimes with various religious groups. So this idea of discipleship, you become a learner, you become a pupil, you become a student of someone, and then you begin to follow their ways. I guess you could say ultimately that everybody is a disciple of someone or something. Even Satan has his own disciples. In John chapter 3, verses 1 and 2, we've got our next reference there. Sherman, is that you? Okay.
There is a man of the Pharisees named Nicodemus, the ruler of the Jews. This man came to Jesus by night and said to him, Rabbi, we know that you are a teacher come from God, for no one can do these signs that you do unless God is with him.
All right. Nicodemus comes to Jesus by night. Maybe that was the only time he had. It seems more likely that he was some kind of secret disciple. Would you say that there are still some secret disciples today when it comes to Christianity? How about out there in the workplace? Person works at their job. Maybe they do a good job for a number of years. And yet, how many people know that they're a Christian? They never want that to be known. They just want to be known as a good person. They want to be known as a hard worker. But sometimes people can be a secret disciple of Christ. But that, when you look at what Jesus taught, when you look at the New Testament, that's not the kind of life that God wants for his people. On a number of occasions, looking at point 6, Jesus said, follow me. Now, we can't obviously do the same. We live in a different culture. People would think that we were pretty strange folks if we went around telling people, hey, follow me. But we can give what kind of invitation? It's not exactly that one, but what can we say? Or what can we do when it comes to encouraging people to be disciples of Jesus? We can say, follow
me.
Well,
Jesus.
Yeah, we can encourage people to follow Christ. And that's one of the things that we do need to do. When you look at Jesus, there were some people. He sometimes called people from their business. You think about Matthew, the tax collector, over there in Matthew chapter 9 and verse 9. Jesus said, I want you to follow me. When you, as I said, more than 260 times, when you look at the New Testament, this word is used 262 times to be exact. This was a major point, a major point of focus when it comes to Jesus' ministry. He was telling people again and again, I want you to be my disciple. You have references to his disciples. He wanted them to be pupils. He wanted them to be learners. He wanted them to receive the instruction that he had. And that's the same thing today. We are to be disciples of Jesus Christ. You see in Mark chapter 3 and verse 14, he appointed 12 that they might be with him and that he might send them forth to preach. So Jesus was training the disciples. There are a lot, and as Mom said a little bit ago, there are some religious groups. They have disciple in their church name. They're focused on encouraging people to become learners of Christ and then to fulfill his will. And that's ultimately our goal in life. We want to be disciples of Jesus Christ. We want to know him and we want to serve him to the best of our ability. When we look at point number 9, not all goals are lifelong. When we think about being a disciple of Jesus, though, this should be a lifelong goal for us. This should be something that we think about on a daily basis. This should be something that we're trying to consider as far as how can I become a better disciple, a better learner when it comes to Jesus Christ. I want to know his will to the best of my ability, and I want to serve him to the best of my ability every single day. A couple more references here. We've got Luke chapter 6 and verse 40, and also Matthew chapter 19 and verse 21. We'd like both of those read. Luke chapter 6 and verse 40. We have a volunteer for that one. Luke 6, verse 40. Don, and then we'll take a look at what we have over in Matthew chapter 19 and verse 21. Mom, and if you'll hang close to that, Mom, we'll head you over to Matthew chapter 22, about three chapters later. But let's start with Luke chapter 6 and verse 40.
The disciple was not above his master. Everyone that is perfect shall be as his master.
All right. Jesus says the disciple needs to become as his master. That goes back to what we talked about earlier as far as what Peter had to say. We want to follow in the footsteps of Jesus Christ. We're not ever going to do that perfectly, obviously, but we can learn. We can learn a lot, and we can continue to work at this every single day. But that was Jesus' standard for discipleship. Become as your master. We'll see a little bit later, Romans chapter 12, where Paul talks about conforming our life to the standard that God has given. In Matthew chapter 19 and verse 21, let's take a look at that. Mom?
Jesus said to him, if you want to be perfect, go sell what you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come, follow me.
Okay, he gives there one of the impediments as far as being a disciple of Christ, and that can be wealth, that can be what we treasure up. Can you think of some other things that might cause us to struggle when we think about becoming a disciple of Christ? What are some other ways that we might be deterred from being a good disciple?
Personal habits.
All right, there can be some personal habits that we've developed perhaps long before we became a Christian, and those things interfere with our becoming a disciple. Anything else?
Your associates.
All right, our friends, we think about 1 Corinthians chapter 15, where Paul said evil companionships corrupt good morals. He was talking about false teachers, but our companions can have an impact as far as our being a disciple of Jesus. So if it's not wealth, if it's not habits, and if it's not our associates, anything else when it comes to being a disciple of Christ, challenges to that? Well, what about the way of the world? Just being out in society. We're out there and we see all kinds of stuff. We hear all kinds of stuff. We're surrounded by stuff, even in our homes. As far as TV, internet, we live in a very bad world in a lot of ways. And ancient Christians struggled to some degree with some of that, with heathenism and paganism. And we don't have some of the stuff that they had, thankfully, but we certainly get plenty of it. So it is a struggle to be a disciple of Christ because we always have the world trying to head us in a different direction. So as we look at point number 9, again, not all goals are lifelong, but when we think about being a disciple, that is a lifelong goal, that is a lifelong process. Hopefully we get better at it every single year that we live, and we learn from our mistakes, we move forward, but for each one of us, it is an ongoing process. Anything that you want to add or ask before we move down a little bit more? Don?
You mentioned people you work with, people you read around, and how can you be let them know that you're a Christian? Well, sometimes the way we talk can let them know we're not Christians until we act and tell them we're not Christians. So we don't have to say a lot. You know, some people don't like to be talked about. Christ. You may just turn some of them off. But if you live the life of Christ, wherever you are, they're going to eventually see you don't curse, you know, you don't go to bars, you don't do a lot of things, you don't put people down, you know, those kind of things. After a while, will rub off on people that know you or see you?
Yes, it will. I would add just one thing to that. If you are around people long enough where they have a chance to see those things, chances are, at some point, they will, for the lack of a better word, test you in a way. They hear how you talk, they get some idea as far as how you think, and they will test you by seeing how you react.
Sure.
They'll tell some bad stories or use some foul words and see if you'll laugh at some raunchy jokes and those kinds of things. Your reactions to things are judged as well. So it's kind of a two-edged sword there. You can do all the right things, but when it comes to reacting, at some point, typically, you're also going to be tested in the workplace or you know, your neighborhood, wherever that happens to be, your school. And hopefully you pass all those tests so you do reasonably well. But they will try to find something where they can fault you and say, well, at least you do this, even though you may have gotten all these other things right or done all the other things well.
Well, that's true. But whether they're testing you or not, whether you use foul language or terrible things or new things, you can talk to them about it.
Absolutely.
You know, I have friends I've had that use the F word too many times, and I said, I'm not going to be around you if you use that. And especially that's terrible around women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you only do that around men, you know, I can't say anything, but don't do that around men.
Yeah.
So, you know, actually they'll back off. It was amazing when you say that. And when they curse, you know, they'll back off too. If they know that you don't like that kind of language.
Yeah, you're right. And people will sometimes apologize. I know that happens. This was one of the things that came up at Fried Hardeman. There was a guy, he was speaking at a lecture, and he made the point that a lot of times after a person learns what he does, people will actually apologize. So, I mean, that's thoughtful, but we want to make sure that we put forth the best example regardless of who we are as a Christian.
But if we lose a friend,
yeah, you can.
Because of that, it's okay.
Yes, you're right. Anybody else? All right, let's move down a little bit more. See what we've got. When we think about discipleship, we're talking about our thoughts. Paul talked about bringing every thought into captivity of Christ when he was writing to the Corinthians, and that is a challenge. Whether we're dealing with someone, maybe it's a random thought, but trying to take our thoughts and keep them Christ-centered, to keep them consistent with the Bible, that can be a difficult thing, especially if we're going through some hard times. But that is a part of discipleship. Our priorities, as we think about what matters to us in life, the things that we're trying to accomplish, that needs to, our thoughts and our priorities, they need to be looked at in terms, or we need to have that lens of discipleship. Our friends, that's already been mentioned. Don talked about our speech, possessions, we mentioned that, and our home life. All of those things, we're thinking about being disciples of Christ. And it's really an all-encompassing thing. It really, when you think about Matthew chapter 22 and verse 37, Jesus talked about loving God with all of our heart, soul, strength, and mind. And that's what we're talking about as far as being a disciple. We want to, when we think about the Christian life, put all of our energy, all of our effort into it. We do have other aspects of life that need to be taken care of. But when we become a disciple of Christ, we really want to do our very, very best. Being a disciple means that we know why we're on the earth. A lot of people have, well, I guess we'll just throw that out as far as a question. When you think about life, existence, people, their version of why we're here is often what? Why do people think we're on the planet?
Have a good time.
All right. There are some people who see life as nothing more than really one big party. Other people, why are we here?
To procreate.
Oh, all right. There would be some people that think we're here just to kind of spend our time and keep the planet going. Any other reasons why people think that we're here?
I don't think some even think about it. I think they just go along with life.
We're here, so we'll just make the best of it. Well, and maybe that is a good really good answer as far as, you know, people just have never really thought why we're here. But for the Christian, and it's on the sheet, but why are we here? What's our purpose? Yeah, and to glorify God. That is why we're here. We were put here to honor God. Well, how are we going to do that? How are you going to honor God? Thinking back as far as a pupil or an apprentice, if you are working with someone or you're the nurse illustration that we use, how are you going to honor the person who is trying to train you? Or looking at it negatively, how would you disrespect that person? They show you all the stuff to do, they guide you step by step, and how do you disrespect them?
You don't follow the instructions.
All right, that would be a biggie, wouldn't it? You don't follow the instructions, you are not thoughtful, you are not respectful, you have little regard for what the person is trying to help you do or accomplish or learn. So if we think about being a disciple, we are trying to follow God's will so that we can honor and glorify him. Mentioned Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, Paul said, "And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is the good and acceptable and perfect will of God." When you think about the Christian life, it is a life where the mind is being transformed. We're trying to take what we learned that was wrong, that was contrary to the ways of God, and we're trying to switch all that around so that we will now live a life which is acceptable in the sight of God. And that is an ongoing thing. When you think about discipleship, this is point number 10. It means that we are willing to be changed into something we likely are not. And that is tough. We think of, you know, for example, if you have done a job, maybe you were working as far as something in the house and you put down some tile or something else and you said, "We really don't like that. We're going to have to rip that up and we're going to have to change it out to something else." That's going to take time. That's going to take energy. That's going to take work. And it might cost you something in the process. So when we think about becoming a Christian, the mind is being transformed. We're saying we're going to take our thinking and we're going to switch it. We're going to change it. Maybe there's going to be a drastic change so that we can be a disciple of Christ. But we are going to do our best to literally transform our minds. And that's going to cost us something. That's why Jesus talked about counting the cost. That's why Jesus, when he was talking to people, he was calling them to what many have referred to as total commitment. Yet when you look at a lot of people as they think about Christianity, or maybe even as they embrace Christianity, that transformation is not really what they want. What's a common version of Christianity for many? How do they see the gospel and faith?
Part-time.
All right. I think that's a really good description for it. It's going to be a part-time thing. I will do this when it's convenient for me, or I'll do this as far as the easy parts. I'll do this as far as the parts where I'm already kind of headed in that general direction. But to go and to actually uproot some things in my life that are not consistent with being a disciple of Christ, I really don't want to do that. But Jesus doesn't give us that option. When he talks about following in the footsteps of Christ, 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 20, 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 21, it is an all or nothing proposition. So as we have on the sheet as far as point number 10 at the end, we are not spectators when it comes to the Christian faith. We are to be active participants. Anything that you want to add or ask before we pick up with John chapter 8 and verse 31? All right, let's take a look at John 8. See what we have in that 31st verse. John 8:31. Mom?
Then Jesus said to those Jews who believed him, "If you abide in my word, you are my disciples indeed."
Okay, if we're going to make this great transformation as far as changing our thinking, if we're going to have Christ formed in us in Galatians chapter 4 and verse 19, how are we going to do it? What's going to be that power that's going to help us accomplish that?
Study the word.
All right, it's going to be God's word. Heard a Bible professor talk about young people who will sometimes come in either to see him or somebody else. They've been away from school for a little while. You know, hearts are young, hearts are tender, and kids are just trying to kind of get the feet wet as far as the young adult years. And he said, a lot of times young people will come into me and they will say, "I think I'm losing my spirituality. Before I came to school, I felt like I was a strong Christian, and now I just feel like I'm just kind of wandering and drifting. And Christianity is just kind of fading from me." So he said when that happens, he sits down and asks the student some questions. He asks, I think there were three questions. He said, "How much are you praying?" "Well, I go to chapel every day and we pray every day." He said, "No, that's not what I'm asking. How much do you pray on your own?" "Well, not very much." He said, "Okay. Question number two, how much do you read your Bible every day?" "Well, we've got a Bible class, and we hear the Bible in chapel, and there's some other stuff that happens with the Bible." And he said, "Again, that's not my question. How much are you personally reading your Bible every day?" And the question invariably is answered with, "Not very much." And then question number three, he says, how often are you attending services? Again, the same kind of answer. I attend chapel every day, and I'm around a lot of Christians. He said, no, that's not the question as far as services, and I hardly ever go. He said, those three questions and those three answers are almost always the same. So if you are not praying, if you are not studying, and if you are not fellowshipping with God's people, what do you think is going to happen to you spiritually? You are going to wilt. You've got to have those three connections if you're going to be on the right path to discipleship. Jesus, of course, emphasizes the word in John chapter 8 and verse 31, but those other two things are also critical. But a lot of times people get off the path and maybe they start with one and then the second issue sets in as far as maybe it's praying, and then it starts to also involve God's word, and then fellowship often soon follows. But when we think about being a disciple of Christ, there is a certain path to follow. There are certain things that are necessary to keep us on that path. And when we begin to slip for a different reason than the Galatians, as I said, it was false teaching for the Galatians. But we can need, once again, Christ to be reformed in us. And thankfully, that's something that can be done. If we do get off track, Galatians 4:19 tells us that that process can begin once again. Paul said he was in travail. That is, this was going to be a difficult thing for him to accomplish. And we've seen that as we've kind of slugged our way through the book of Galatians. But if people do get off the right track, thankfully, there is a process to get them back on the right path. All right, 12, and then we'll see if there's anything that you want to add or ask. We need to realize that being a disciple means following God and representing Him on the earth. So we are doing our best to conform to His life, and then we're doing our best to encourage others to follow Him as well. And there may be at different times in history, we've seen sometimes many people interested in that, other times in history, very few people interested in that. But our job is to do our best to represent Him as well as we can and to encourage people to also follow Him. And a lot of different ways to do that, but we all need to be following Christ. Anything that you want to add or ask before we go down a little bit more? Sherman?
Your example of the student is just like everyday life. Yeah. What you put into it is normally what you get back.
Yeah.
It's normal.
Yeah. Well, you think about, you know, there are consequences. In the book of Galatians, Paul is going to say in Galatians chapter 6, there's the sowing and reaping principle. And if you're failing to sow, you shouldn't expect to reap very much. And if you're not sowing in the area of discipleship, your ability to function as a Christian is going to be very, very limited. And probably at some point it's just going to be killed off. You will die spiritually. Anybody else? Okay. Let's see what else we've got down here. Moving down to point number 13. When we think about being a disciple of Christ, here's one of the reasons that we want to do that. We may be the only image of God that some ever see. That is a frightening thought to me. When people think about God, the only version of God that they may get will be my Christian life. But that's true for some of the people that we interact with. So we need to do our very best to imitate Him and His ways. It's not surprising to see discipleship contrasted with renouncing how much. In our next passage, this is going to be Luke chapter 14 and verse 33. Do we have a volunteer that wants to read that for us? All right, Mom, to you. Luke chapter 14 and verse 33.
So likewise, whoever of you does not forsake all that he has cannot be my disciple.
Okay. Jesus says, needs to be willing to forsake all he has. Have you ever seen someone or known of someone who was really committed to some kind of task? Someone who put everything that they had into accomplishing something? Have you ever seen that? I'll give you an illustration. Here's a lady who maybe has a mom or dad who was able to play the piano very well, and then that mom or dad wanted to instill that skill into their child. So when it comes to playing the piano, they're there for 5 or 6 hours a day. I can't imagine that. I banged on a piano a little bit, and it was just never of any interest to me. But can you imagine working at a piano 5 or 6 hours a day? Where else do you see that kind of commitment where people want to really learn something, and they pour themselves into it?
Absolutely.
All right. That would be, we think about the Super Bowl coming up this weekend, and athletes of all kinds, they pour themselves into it, and I mean, they just go all out. Football, basketball, baseball, the training, the effort, because they want to be the best of the best. Anybody else?
What about a carpenter wanting to build the perfect home for himself?
All right, there would be some people who are skilled in the area of building trades, and there were some people, or even just planning a dream house. There are people who plan a dream house. They spend years on it, down to the last detail, going over the blueprints. I remember a fellow who did that. He planned out his house for about 4 years, and just going over the prints and finding the right builder, all the right. He even had oak trim in his garage. He's the only guy I've ever known that had oak trim in his garage, but he wanted it down to the last detail. So people will pour themselves literally into all kinds of things, and yet when it comes to being a Christian, it's, well, you know, we've been baptized and we'll read the Bible a little bit, but that's not what Jesus talks about when he talks about being a disciple of Christ. He frames it in terms of being willing to forsake all. Point number 15 is similar. He says not everyone wants to be a disciple of Jesus. Many opt for being a good person who goes to church. And that is, and it has been for a long time, kind of the American way. There are a lot of things that we can approach when it comes to life. We can be a member of something and maybe not real committed. Someone says, well, you know, I'm a member of AAA. I pay my dues and I'm kind of content with that. But that's not what we're talking about when we're dealing with the Christian life. There is a lot more to it when we say, I want to become a Christian. When we think about being a disciple of Jesus, it takes work. It is daily effort. There are some books that have been written which talks about the Christian life in 5 minutes a day, and that stuff is just flat out wrong. It takes work to have the right thoughts, to have the right attitudes, to do the right things, to live the Christian life. It is a struggle, and it is a struggle for all people. Some days are easier than others, but this is, as we said before, a lifelong effort. There are some people who get discouraged or distracted as they live the Christian life. Judas, of course, is one fella. He did not keep his heart in the right place when it came to possessions. He was tempted to betray Jesus, and he did, for the 30 pieces of silver. And, you know, he did a very bad thing. But that tells us that when it comes to being a disciple of Christ, there's no guarantee that we can just sort of set it on autopilot and be okay. It does take work, and we do not want to fall into the unfaithful category. In Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 20, this is our next reference, pulling from point 18. God says he wants his people to do something. So we want to have that verse read, and we want to think about what it means. Ephesians 4:20, a volunteer, and then we'll take a look at it as far as the meaning. Sherman?
But you have not so learned Christ, if indeed you have heard him and have been taught by him, as the truth is in Jesus.
Okay, what's the key point there? He says God wants his people to, two words,
learn
Christ. What do you think that means? I want you to learn Christ.
Know him.
Okay. Anybody ever move around their bedroom when it's dark or another part of the house?
Stub your toe.
Yeah, well, that's not really what I wanted as far as the illustration. I was hoping that you can say that you move around your bedroom. You may have to feel the way you're on a little bit. But you know your bedroom, you know some other part of the house so well that you're able to pretty much move without much difficulty when it's dark. You don't have to turn on the light. You're able to navigate that okay. There are some other things in life where you know that so well, or maybe you can button your shirt without looking at it, or you can do some other things where it's almost rote. You don't have to give any thought to it at all. Well, we're talking about learning Christ, to be so familiar with him that it is second nature when it comes to our thinking, when it comes to our actions, to live in a way which is consistent with his will. And that's what Paul is telling the Ephesians, and that's what he wants for us as well, to learn Christ. Now, that's going to be tough. You may remember that in Luke chapter 9 and verse 23, Jesus said, if you want to come after me, you have to deny yourself and you have to take up your cross, and you have to do that how often?
Daily.
Well, you would think that if someone's become a Christian and they become a Christian for very long, all this stuff would be, as I mentioned a moment ago, it would be sort of on autopilot. But Jesus didn't say that. He said, this is something that you need to do every single day. Christianity is a thinking religion. It is not a thoughtless faith. So you're doing your very best every day to be a disciple of Christ and to say, I want to do my best to conform my life to Jesus more and more. We might sometimes look at that in terms of a new year. We sometimes take inventory. That's not a bad thing to do, to say, this is what my Christian life was like last year. Let's try to do some things differently this year. Maybe we've never read the Bible through before, and we think that's something that we want to try to do, or maybe we're working on a bad habit. We've had limited to no success before, and we say, this is something that I really need to give up to truly try to live a better Christian life. So there's always that daily struggle. Point number 20, give regular attention to Christian characteristics and strive for spiritual maturity. There's some things in the Bible which are difficult. But when you think about, for example, the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, meekness, self-control, those things are not all that difficult to understand. And as we think about living the Christian life, those are items that we can look at and say, all right, how well am I doing here? We could go back and read about the qualities of love in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Are these things that I can improve on? Do I have some areas where I can obviously see that I'm deficient and I need to see if I can make some additional spiritual improvement? So some of those things are tough. And when we get to the point where we think that I have really done well, we can check out some passages like Matthew chapter 10 and verse 37. Let's read that one, and who'd like to be our helper? Matthew chapter 10, verse 37. Mom, to you.
He who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me.
Okay, Jesus, most people love their families, and Jesus says when it comes to family, where does that need to be as far as a priority list?
Second.
That's hard for a lot of people. Can you think of some times or some of the ways where we would have to put family second? Putting family number two.
Well, what about when the kids' sports games interfere with services?
All right. You have some questions about attendance that need to be answered. What are we going to do there? What else? And you do have some marriages where either one may be religious and the other is not, or one's a member of the church or the one and one is not, are you going to stick with what's right? Or are you going to let the marriage take precedence and you say, I'll simply come with you or we'll not go anywhere? But that does become a conflict in some marriages. So that is absolutely right. Anything else as far as families? How they're put second? Okay. We'll leave it there. We've got about 5 minutes left, so let's see if we can pick up the sheet, the rest of the sheet. Give additional examples of self-denial. Can you think of any real quick? Self-denial. What about addictions? They're tough to overcome. Sometimes there may be some outside things that need to be done as far as some counseling or medicine. But self-denial, if we're going to be a disciple of Jesus, the Bible teaches it. How might we deny ourselves? All right, I think that's going to be a good general answer. There are going to be some things which we really want to do, and we say, as a disciple of Jesus, that's not something that I think I can do. In Luke chapter 5 and verse 11, the Bible says some fishermen left how much? They left?
Everything.
They left it all. And that's hard for us perhaps to envision, but that's what these men did. They were willing to sacrifice every single thing to be a disciple of Jesus. You see a similar thing in Revelation chapter 2 and verse 10. Be faithful even to the point of death. That's what it means to be a disciple. Becoming a disciple means turning from our old life. We find the new life in God's family. This is not quick. It's not easy. There is a cost to it. And that's why Jesus said that we need to count the cost. We also want to encourage others to become a disciple of Christ. And when we start talking to others about being a disciple of Christ, it's not just, hey, come and worship with me. It's not just, hey, I'd like you to be baptized. It is, we want you to count the cost. We want you to be a true imitator, a true follower of Jesus Christ. When you look at Jesus, he stressed 3 points about discipleship. If you're going to try to convince somebody that they should leave all, family should be second, and that Christ is worth every single thing that we have, how are you going to do that?
You have to set a good example.
Yeah, that's true, but looking at it from the standpoint of what we have here, under 27a, if you're going to convince somebody to become a disciple in the way that we've talked about, what will they first have to probably be convinced of? If I'm going to follow you, follow in your footsteps, and I'm willing to give up every single thing I have to do that.
How important it is.
Yeah, or I think I want to know who I'm following, right? Do you have the ability to deliver in the ways that you're talking about? And Jesus, he is the Son of God. I heard a great point when I was at the lectures this past week, looked at things a little differently as far as the ancient world and picking up some things from Revelation. That was the focus. If you take a look at Mark, let's just do that real quick. I know that's not in the sheet, but I'll show you one of the things that I learned. Anybody know who Mark was written to? As far as a people? It was written to the Romans. And when you go back and you start looking at ancient Rome, how were some of the Caesars addressed? Anybody know? Lord and God. Some of them were referred to as the Son of God. Notice how Mark begins his book. The beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. There was one speaker who made the point that very likely Mark was making a contrast in his gospel when he was writing to the Romans. The lords, the emperors, they refer to themselves as the Son of God. But let me tell you about the true Son of God. Mark chapter 1 and verse 1. He showed the identity of Jesus and lays that out, and that should be foundational for us as well. If we're going to be talking to people about becoming a disciple of Jesus, we need to let them know that Jesus is the Son of God. He has all authority on heaven and earth. He's going to be the world's judge at some point, and he summons people to obey. Mark chapter 1, verses 18 and 20. So he has it all. He offers it all. But if you're going to consider being a disciple of Jesus Christ, you need to be willing to count the cost. And that's in Luke chapter 14. And we need to emphasize these three points for our day and time. Final thought. Okay. Well, we'll get back into Galatians. We're ready for verse 27 next week. And like I say, continue to talk about being a disciple of Christ. But that is one of the things that God does require from us.